In the studio, I've got the second by-election candidate to be interviewed by me. It's Kerry Binnensley. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, you're running for election?
Sure.
Why? Why are you running?
I find, well, it's something that I've always been interested in, looking at different political, well, just how things work, essentially. I mean, it's not something that you get into very easily unless your parents are into it. But again, I'm just really interested in what's happening in the community and how to support the community, being a voice. I hear, you know, I do notice as well, and I've noticed for a long time, it's always been a bit of the older generation, and I haven't seen a lot of the younger generation. And what inspired me before was a good friend of mine in Auckland. She standed for the local body election,
yeah.
And it was really good to see, because you just see a lot more different things happening within the community, which supports the younger people, and of course, yeah.
So how old are you?
I'm 30.
You're 30.
But I feel like I've been at uni for the last, well, I feel like I'm always studying. I've been at uni for about 6 years. I'm a doctor of chiropractic, and I'm still always doing the courses, and I'm studying coaching and looking at mental health. So it just never stops.
But you're running your own, you're practicing as a chiropractor as well.
Yes. I'm taking a bit of time off, actually, because I'm going to be doing some online work, and also I've employed someone at the Ragan Chiropractic.
Okay, so people might know you from the old medical centre around there.
Yeah.
Or they might have seen the sign and they'll be making that connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, all right, so you're seeing benefits of bringing a younger voice into the political sphere. What do you say for people who think you might be too young?
Ah, well,
I imagine that some people will think that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I feel as though there needs to be, I mean, I've got a lot of knowledge from being on different boards, from Aotearoa Women's Surfing Association to just being on the local Board Riders Club board.
Yeah.
And, of course, being a part of, even at school, I was part of the Students Against Drunk Driving, so I would, you know, do a lot of campaigns for that, and, of course, Amnesty International. So I was always been a side of something.
You're on a board for Amnesty International?
No, I wasn't on the board, but I was on the student advisory. I was like a student advisory role, and I was there to help advise within our group, well, within our school group, how can we provide support for our own diversity? How do you provide support for different cultures in our schooling environment? So that was sort of more of an advocate role.
So why Students Against Drunk Driving? I'm interested in that one.
Oh, it's just like a really important thing. I mean, we're not educated enough at school about, you know, well, essentially don't drink and drive. But again, you've got to realise that with children and with developing brains, men's brains don't develop till 35 plus, the prefrontal cortex, which is your reasoning and development. And women, it's about 24 to 25. So you're telling people to, hey, don't do that. It's a bad idea to drink and drive. And, you know, you're starting to drink. Kids are starting to drink at 18. You know, it's like
starting at 18.
Well, younger than that. Yeah. You know, I mean, generally. But again, it's just educating the safety of how to be safe around it. But I was just really passionate about it because I felt like there wasn't a lot of nurturing around that, and also I lost a partner to a drunk driver. Not at that time, but I was always sort of against it.
Mm.
Yeah,
that would do that. That would do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. It was definitely important for me. So I've always felt for standing up for what you believe in, but again, also being supportive of what other people's thoughts are as well. So that was really important for me, and that's also why I wanted to stand for the board, because I feel like there's a lot of differentiating opinions, and you may not always agree with the opinion, but I think it's coming down to, hey, well, what can we do as a collective? Not everyone's going to agree, but at the end of the day, there needs to be a decision made, you know.
Mm.
So.
And what's your family background and all that sort of thing?
Family background, my parents, nothing, but my
Parents, nothing?
My parents didn't do anything in regards to, like, do you mean political or just in regards to...
No, just generally, and where you fuck a papa to and all that sort of thing.
So my mum, we fuck a papa back to Tiki Tiki, so she's Māori.
Where is Tiki Tiki?
Up by East Cape.
Okay, right.
And, well, Hikarangi to Maunga, so we're Ngāti Porou, so all up in the Rastafarian country up there.
Yep.
So that's where my whānau are from, and my kōrō, so my grandfather was a chief of Ngāti Porou. He passed away when I was really young. He was very much involved in the Māori language in schools. Yep. So he was advocating for getting Māori language back in schools because he would teach at rural Māori schools,
yeah,
and they would get the, you know, like it was very frowned upon. So he was fighting for that, and of course my koro's brother, so my grandfather's brother, he was Papa Cassidy, so he was in he was actually in the parliament, so he got the bill to actually pass getting Māori speaking back into schools. So
that
was basically my uncle.
Did you get the chance to learn while you were growing up?
Well, when he passed, I was probably, to learn Te Reo Māori. My mum actually taught me a little bit, but she wasn't confident enough in teaching it. Because we grew up in Queenstown, so my mum actually opened the first kohanga reo. There was only four of us in the school, so.
I was going to say, there wouldn't have been a huge demand down that way.
I was always the token, you know, one sent out to do the karanga, and it was like, what the hell? There's very... So my upbringing into Māoridom and tikanga Māori was a bit skewed because I was always the brown girl, the token brown girl, you know, and especially going to a private school. And
right.
Yeah. And I was like, why are you teaching kohanga reo songs? And we were always the naughty kids, you know, being the Māori.
What about your father's side of the family? Where's he from?
He's English. And so he's all from Bournemouth. He's always been in the film business, and my parents met over in France. My mum was working there. So they met over in France, and they worked in the film business for quite some time, hence they were living in Queenstown, because a lot of films get made down there, like Lord of the Rings.
Because of the landscape.
The landscape, yeah. A lot of,
the only time I've been down that way, I ended up driving through a film set by accident, so...
What's happening here?
Yeah, it was the Narnia film set, actually. And then we were driving down this road that had leaves on it, and as we drove through, all these people leapt out of the bushes and started raking up the leaves so they looked natural again. So I totally understand what you mean about that area being used for films. Okay, but we're not here to talk about that. So what about, have you had much feedback from people locally about your choice to run?
Yeah, absolutely.
Despite being in lockdown.
There's a lot of hesitancy around getting a younger person into the board, because they're kind of like, what are you going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do? What are your thoughts on it? What do you? Some people are actually, I've had a few people come up and go, oh, I voted for you. And I'm like, great, cool. That's really great. But then again, you know, that's only the small number of people that I do know. I think at the end of the day, I can only be authentically me. And then if that isn't sort of seen as being authentic, or I'm only here to learn, and I might make mistakes like everyone does, but actually at the end of the day I'm here to help make the calls and make decisions on the bettering Raglan as a community, and
is there something that you'd like to, something or some things that you'd like to achieve or contribute to on the board?
Yep, absolutely. I am a big advocate on water safety as well. So working with Daniel Kiriopa, there needs to be better water safety, you know, especially for kids and even teenagers, teaching about proper, you know, water safety. And if we can get some funding through council and help get DK on board, and because, you know, he's already doing it, but it's just more getting that support behind him to be able to, and some more people to jump on board to help educate water safety, because again we live on the West Coast beach, and it's like, doesn't take too much, you know, even for me, if I'm caught off guard and feeling like a little bit run down that day and decide to go for a paddle, I can get caught in a rip and just feel a bit tired. And I surf, luckily, so I understand the ocean, but if I didn't understand the ocean, then you can easily get caught off guard.
Well, I think we just had a big rescue on the weekend just gone, didn't we?
Yeah,
down out there. So
I just think educating about you know, there's nothing really here, or there is stuff happening, but I think it needs to be on a bigger scale for, you know, there's some stuff for the school, but maybe just running some courses for the locals or even people that are interested in finding more about the surf. So it's just meaning that it's safety first. So I mean, I'd be interested in looking at that sort of, because I haven't really seen that happening. And
I think one of the things that we've noticed is that it's often visitors who get caught out more than locals, especially on, I guess if you go for a percentage term, off the top of your head, or have you thought of ways of trying to connect with them? And we just had the body of one of those fishermen who was lost at Papanui Point. Mm. Papanui?
Yeah.
Turn up yesterday, I think it was announced. So.
Yeah, the fishing, that place is pretty treacherous, and they've put a... Because my friend, she's working on the search and rescue DK, and they go out and look, but that's really... They don't understand the huge tide changes, and
clearly,
it can catch people out pretty... But again, I think even still, there are not just tourists. I mean, there are a lot of just even locals and people that live around. I mean, we have an understanding, but you can easily get caught out. Like, I can get caught out and just understand that, you know, teaching them younger and just having proper training programs in place for, hey, if this does happen, this is what you can do. And I did a lot of that surf life saving back in when I was younger, and I think that teaching water safety is huge in the community. But there is a lot of other things that I'm passionate about, you know, and it's just listening to what other people are wanting and in the community, and just making, you know, standing up for what's right. And
so, especially in terms of your age group, what do you think people are wanting out there at the moment in terms of things the community board can impact?
So I know that they're working on the walkway and stuff like that, but I think, you know, having nice areas to be able to exercise and, again, so from what I'm hearing, that's majority of just saying, and maybe potentially somewhere safe that they could, they're talking about maybe having access to, I mean, whether they talk to the school about helping out with the pool.
Yeah.
So we can access the pool or something to train for if you need to do any breath holding stuff. Or
I don't think the pool's in use at the moment, is it?
And that's a crazy thing as well. There's no, and that's one thing that I would be really passionate to look into, to see about getting either private or some funding for a pool somewhere, or whether we work with the school pool to make it so that community can use the pool. Because again, other than the ocean, we've got nowhere to, you know, it's a safe, controlled environment to practice, you know.
Yeah.
If you fall off or you get stuck somewhere, you can hold your breath.
It's actually pretty unusual for a school in a seaside community to not have a functioning swimming pool. I know it's a funding issue, but, and I'm not particularly criticising the school because I know how funding works for schools, but that is probably a bit of a concern.
But it's, for me, it's just like getting the council and, you know, it's just always been a passion of mine. But again, I'm talking from, you know, I'm hearing about other, of course, there's a lot of issues going on right now. This airstrip, there is the wastewater system, you know, we talk about that a lot in the board riders because, of course, that affects the surfers.
Mm.
So, again, you know, there's a boat ramp and, you know, there's fishermen and surfers, there's that whole thing. So it's really been interesting working with board riders, is because you're hearing a lot of those issues that will pop up, and how do you go about that? Because again, it needs to go be put forward, then it needs to then go to council, then council needs to agree to him, then agree to disagree. But it's just also for me, it's understanding the processes and being a part of being able to create the change, but being able to be there. That's the huge thing for me, is, you know, I'm going to be honest, I'm new to it, but of course I'm also here to learn and be someone that can actually listen in and see if I can actually help with the change, talk to other community people. And
so after seeing in years past new people getting on the community board, I always ask this question now of everyone, which is, are you aware that the community board doesn't have actual power over a lot of things?
Yeah, I'm aware of that, yeah.
It's an advisory board?
It's an advisory board, yes, and it's, that's the thing. There's a lot of hoops to jump if you want to make some change as well. But it's also, so advisory board, but again, it's still, you still have a say, you still can put forward something, you know, as a board, which is still better than nothing, in my opinion.
Yeah. So how do you think a board in that situation has an effect on council?
Well, if nothing was said, then nothing gets done. But again, if there's enough people to rally what needs to be done, something can change. Of course, there might be a few meetings and debates going on before stuff would actually happen.
Yeah.
And of course, you're seeing that a lot with the airfield right now, where it's just lots of different communications going on and nothing really sort of... It's depending on what the issue is, it can take a long time to get an actual result. But so I'm all for getting there and offering a voice of, you know, checking in, hearing all the views, and of course, seeing what you can do about it.
The your competing candidate has had a lot to say about the airfield. Do you want to stake a position on that yourself?
Well, in all honesty, because I've looked into the it just seems like a big kerfuffle. Because again, I've been looking; it's been around for a while now. the big one for me is that being Māori, again, looking into the history of that. Again, it was taken for the use of the war. It's just sort of, I feel like a lot of the whole idea of, or purpose behind it has been taken away. So, I mean, now it's just like, oh, is it an airstrip? Oh, no, it's a gliding. Or actually, no, it's for emergencies. No. And then there's this whole, seems like to be the not, ideally what I, my position is that ideally from what I'm hearing, the community want it to be able to use as a recreational ground or be able to walk through. They don't want it fenced off. So, again, I don't reckon that they should be fencing it off, but, again, not everyone's going to agree because they can't fly their planes in.
Yeah.
So, not again, agree to disagree, but majority votes that they want to use the airstrip as a recreational ground. And, of course, Māori want the land back. So, of course, if they want the land back, they have every right to take it back if it was theirs initially.
Yeah.
And it was taken for the use of war, then, of course, that's a matter that needs to be addressed. So, I do agree with the fact that if they do want the land back and it was taken back for the golf course, then they should have it back. Okay. If that's the agreement between the iwi, hapu, and obviously if that's what they want, then of course they should be gifted the land back because it's not being used effectively for what it's been said it should be used for.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to go back to, you were talking about the boat ramp presumably at Manu Bay.
Mm.
And your association with the board riders. I'm actually curious because we've heard a lot from the fishing club about how they feel about the boat ramp and the new seawall there, which is not really a wall anymore. It's a different shape. I don't think I've heard anything from the board riders. Were the board riders quite happy with that or do they see it as a problem as well?
Well, the problem being is that if you tattoo or play around with it, seawall too much can mess with the breakwater, so we can actually effectively change the wave. So if you know, if
did it change between the old wall and the new wall?
Yes, a little bit. It's the backwater. So from my understanding, is that what's been talked about? And Dean Hishon he's really knowledgeable on that because he was sort of he's been around and he's known that break for a long time. So again, he's a good guy to talk to, and he's but again, it's that back. So it's kind of creating that kind of back water flow, if that makes sense. So it bangs up against the wall and then comes back, so it's not coming peeling all the way through like it used to. So that's just really what the worry is in regards to the breakwater.
The board riders aren't really into the current situation either.
There is a bit of, again, they're not consulting the board riders. They're just kind of, it's something that needs to be addressed. The fishermen, they just want a bigger break, you know, as big as they can so they can get their big launches, you know, the big boats out, which is, you know, is great for them. But for the surfers, it's like, well, actually, hey, can you listen in to us? Because this could affect the surf break, you know. We're known for the surf break and how great the waves come through in the bay.
Yeah.
But it can effectively change that. So I think communicating with the board riders would be very much appreciated again with the, but again it's an issue. Yeah, it's another issue that's just arisen. But it's,
do you think you're going to get many votes from the fishing club?
Well, again, it's like
surfing,
fishing. I'm not saying I'm for or against, but actually, at the end of the day, there needs to be an agreement where they both are parties. It's like you can't have it with anything. You can't have a closed mind. You just need to listen in, because it's like, again, I said this thing, the analogy last time. It's like, I want to paint the world purple. And my partner's like, no, that's a horrible colour. I don't want to paint the room purple. You know, like wanting to paint, coming to an agreement. Of course, I don't like, maybe we just go for like a blue. It's like, imagine being with your partner and coming to some sort of agreement. It's the same thing. It's just kind of coming to a middle ground where you can both have agreement. Because again, at the end of the day, no one's going to agree with everything that you say. And then you've just got to stand up and to say, well, majority say this. You know, we need to look at this as a serious thing. And how can we come up to an agreement? Can we come up to an agreement? Maybe not. But again, I think with that whole, the fishing club hasn't really spoken, well, they have. But I think there needs to just be a meeting. It's like anything. Like sometimes it doesn't, they don't meet up to actually have a discussion. Yeah. And then it becomes this like, oh, they said this, she said this, he said that. And then.
Okay, that's right. I don't want to get too deep into that one because that one goes really deep.
Yeah, really deep.
We'll be there for, hours. What about getting local body elections are notorious for not a lot of people voting, especially not a lot of young people voting. Do you think you can get some young people voting this time round?
Yep. So I've spoken to Lisa, and again, there was going to be a thing I thought about doing a little event with a young group, maybe going to the skate park or something and just having a chat with them. But it has always been a thing, but getting people to vote. But it's also, I've been speaking to Joe. He works a lot with the younger...
Joe Wilson?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Who, of course, he does a show.
Yeah.
So that's a big one. That's his sort of role as well. He works with the younger generation to help them, you know, have a place and to have a vote and give them some education on that. So it's pretty cool what he's doing. So, yeah, there's things in the making, but...
I imagine people will assume that you're, because of your age, you're a social media whiz and will be able to take advantage of that in a way that the older candidates might not.
I do think, yeah, there needs to be a bit more chat on, like, what is actually going on. We've got Facebook and there's a little bit of, like, the website, what's going on. But sometimes it's really hard to find what is actually happening in the area. Like, if you can look on the website, which is quite good, but sometimes it's quite good to just have a look at, you know, Instagram or whatever you're flicking on, you know, whatever. Yeah. So different
age
groups.
Use it for as a promotional, like as a campaigning tool? You using it as a campaigning tool?
I haven't been campaigning too much, to be honest. But I've just been getting out in the community, and I've always been quite, always say hi to everyone and again. But I think, yeah, it's a new thing for me, so maybe I need to campaign. I haven't really thought about it.
Alrighty. One thing I want to ask about is when you get on the community board or these council roles, there's a heck of a lot of information to absorb and a lot of reading to do. Are you up for that?
Oh, I'm doing reading all the time anyway, just because I'm a bit of a nerd.
Okay.
Just when it comes down to what's happening anyway. And also I have been going to a few of the meetings and just looking into what is going on.
The community board meetings,
but just listening to see what's going on and taking some notes. But yeah, there is a lot of stuff to absorb, of course, and I might not understand all of it, especially when it comes to the Treasury and then allocations and where, you know, because there's a lot of stuff that's been done which I'm not aware of. So again, I've been listening in and checking, and of course I'm always reading anyway. I've been used to just from
uni. For your what's your qualification?
Doctorate of chiropractic.
So I presume anything doctor wise involves a lot of reading.
So a lot of words that you're not aware of. And yeah, so...
Actually, look, tell us about that. When did you decide you wanted to be a chiropractor?
I studied to be a chiropractor.
And when did you decide you wanted to be?
Sort of later on in life, actually. It was after my snowboarding, because I was competing for New Zealand, in New Zealand's team, and I was training, and I think I just had a few bad injuries, and I'd blown up my knee, and I was like, well, I could keep going and risk the... you know, of actually injuring myself again, or I can go and study. And I remember someone telling me, oh, you should thought about physio or something like that, just to help people. I think it's really, that's what interested me, to help people and to get some answers. So yeah, I went and wanted something physical and hands-on, so that's why I went to study chiro. Initially, first it was osteo, but then they're like, go and study chiro, because then you can still do osteopathic techniques. But the school that is in Auckland is really well renowned around the world, so yeah, I went to study there.
Okay. And how was that a challenge, like when you're coming from a sporting background that's a very different headspace? How challenging was it?
Well, before I started uni, I never read a book, so I had dyslexia and Erlen syndrome.
Oh, okay, right.
I didn't find out I had Erlen syndrome. Yeah, no, I didn't actually. No, I couldn't read. Like, I just always was not into reading. But I discovered I had Erlen syndrome, which is like a sensory perception thing where you read and you can see like white dots on the page. It would just make my brain work a lot harder to read. So normally I wear these kind of rose-tinted glasses and I look like Cher.
Literally rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah. Some people have the bright blue ones or, you know, bright green. It's quite funny. But I didn't know. I was just like, what's wrong with me? I can't read. Or I would just really, I'd be really wiped out. So never read a book until I started uni. Was always sort of like living this high roller lifestyle, traveling around from, you know, all around the world and going, you know, going to parties and whatever. And then I was like, then you have to sit down and study and read chemistry textbooks and do quadratic equations. And I was like, what am I doing? But I forced through it and yeah, passed. But it was pretty cutthroat when you do apply a diploma in applied science and you do 4 years at chiropractic college. And you have to maintain a B+ average. And if you fail more under that, within 3%, you have to reset the whole year. So you get put down a year. And if you fail more than 3 papers, you're expelled. So it's pretty cutthroat.
Wow.
So you have to maintain a B, sort of a B, high B average.
I guess having a 50% pass rate is not, knowing you wouldn't want to go to a chiropractor who only knew about 50% of the body, would you?
No, so yeah, they want to make sure you know, yeah, 70, yeah, so B average for most of them, yeah, and they're cut through.
Right, but you got through.
Yeah.
And you've been, and you're kind of running a business as well at the moment.
Yes.
Effectively you are, you're talking about you're about to employ someone else. That whole business side of that, it's not why you become a chiropractor, but how's that gone?
Yeah, really good. I found it really, I love working with people and knowing the mind-body connection. I do think there needs to be some more education within the community, and I'd love to do some more talks in around town about how to maintain health and also mental health during this time, because it's pretty rife during this whole lockdown, especially businesses affected. And yeah.
How has that affected you, the lockdown?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's affected the business. But again, of course, you've got the government subsidy. But I mean, still, it's like, you know, talk
has
about,
it been enough?
Yeah, I think because it's just me. But if I had staff members, I'd, you know, again, you're seeing that a lot with other businesses. But it's stressful for a lot of businesses that, you know, have high rates or high, you know,
yeah,
rents. And then, of course, you've got your staff
members.
Well,
that's what I'm wondering
for.
About, like, because we don't do it like a business here, and we're fine with our funding anyway. But your staff gets taken care of, but the rent, is that a big black hole that money's just pouring out of?
Well, I think they give you enough money, but depending on the rate, rent, if you just received a rent rebate or anything like that, it can be difficult. And then, of course, depending on what you use for your softwares, and because sometimes they're over in the States and they're a bit, you know, so you're getting different subscriptions, you know, like your phone bill, I don't know, sometimes depending on your costings and how good you were doing leading up to the lockdowns, you know, you could be really struggling. So you see some of that. So there is a lot of stress around for, you know, small businesses. And of course, yeah, just again, like everyone's levels of being, you know, there's a lot of fear around. So I've been working a lot with clients just to help with their emotional stress during the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been really interesting. So definitely, I'm working actually more on the emotional stuff at the moment. I'm stepping away from the chiropractic just at the moment and doing some emotional release stuff. And, of course, working with – so the emotional body work is all online. So I'm working more with clients online, and then going to be doing a bit more of the council stuff and finding out what's going on in the community. And, yeah.
Okay. Now, I always like to ask some big picture questions. And a favourite one is, what's unique about Raglan? Like, when you look at Raglan, and we think we're a special place, but what's unique about this community that people in leadership positions should be looking to, I don't know, maintain or nurture?
Yeah, the big fun for me, which drew me to Raglan, is Whangaroa is mostly the spiritual side of it. because you've got huge energy, especially around Kareoi and around Whale Bay and all that. So there's a lot of Māori, like, especially when I first came to Raglan, I used to have to ask, like, permission to go surfing because there's a lot of that Wairua, you know, the spiritual energy around it. That's what drew me here. And, of course, I've got some relations to the Rikaatsu, my Māori side, and I've always felt like I'd been disconnected from my whakapa, you know, where I'm from, up Tikitiki, because we lived in Queenstown, which is the opposite of the East Cape.
Yes, it's and opposite so in so many ways.
Getting up there was always, like, really special to me, so I love to get more in touch with my Māori side and understand the history more around the area, because, again, there's big Māori history around this area. So for me, that's huge, and that's why I was drawn to come here. And also, it's never been a place that's easy, if that makes sense. Well, the history of Māori, it's always been it's somewhere that you have to kind of be accepted to, in a way. And even with the surfing, if you come here and you have to respect those around you, especially those who've been here for a long time. And then knowing that, and that was one thing that drew me to here, is just like understanding the community and also having that respect for the history around the area, because there's a lot of history, and it's really, I mean, there's history everywhere, but especially around this area, and I found it, that's what drew me here. But again, there's a lot to still learn.
yep.
But I feel like a lot of people are drawn here because of the waves. That's also another thing for me.
And just for the future of Raglan, Whangaroa, like, we all know it's changing. A lot of people don't like the change, but the change is happening anyway. So do you have a perspective on that, what we can do about that, and your role on the community board, how you would be doing that?
I do believe, like, everywhere is changing. It's kind of, it's frightening, you know. I grew up in Queenstown, things blew out just completely. I don't even recognise it when I go down there now. So that I understand the whole part of it changing, and then it's kind of frightening. So I do think that, listening into what the community needs and how can we support those, you know, that have been here through the tough times, and, like, how do we support that, and what can we do to actually create something that is a sense of normality in the environment that we're in, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, otherwise if you grow too quickly, it's just like things get lost, and especially that traditional stuff that used to be done within the community. So I think change is good, but I think at the same time you need to respect, you know, especially what has been done for generations or has been in the community is really important.
Okay, and last question, we'll give you the chance to say, why should people vote for you?
I believe that they should vote for Kitty because I feel as though I'm going to have a new, fresh perspective, and, of course, help to listen in to what people need. And, of course, I'm really passionate about, you know, creating something for the younger people as well. And I think that's important. That's why I feel like that's what's needed in Raglan.
Okay. All right, well,
kia ora.
Thank you for coming in, Kitty. We'll be talking to Kitty Binnersley, Dr. Kitty Binnersley, who's a local chiropractor, and the election closes, I think it's the 9th, and it's a postal vote. So, folks, if you've lost your paper, go and talk to the council if you want to have a vote now.